Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Morning, Glory America. Long, long time. That's how long I'm going to love Shane Bieber for. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, and I got to tell you, Shane Bieber, he's a phenom. He went 9 innings last night for the Indians, 11 strikeouts. He extended his streak to 15 starts with at least 8 strikeouts, tying Pedro Martinez and Randy Johnson for the third longest such in Major League Baseball. Only Martinez was 16 and Randy Johnson was 17 have longer streaks with at least 8 punchouts. Joe Noga in Cleveland. ESPN Stats records his 15th straight game with at least 8 strikeout ties Corey Kluber for the largest reach in Indians history and his most Ks through 3 appearances of a season since 1893. 1973, Nolan Ryan had 37. In 2018, Garrett Cole had 36. In 2020, Shane Bieber had 35. And in 2021, Shane Bieber had 35. Now, he is such a phenom. He's only 1-1 because the Indians, their hitting is a little behind their pitching at this point. But, of course, Generalissimo is tormenting me in the pre-show by talking to me about how he'll look good in Angel Red in 3 years because we just lost Francisco Lindor to the Mets because the Indians are a small market team with a $50 million payroll and Steve Cohen owns the Mets and he can pay for anything he wants. Please, 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 Dolans. I've never gone in for the fact that whole nonsense that you're cheap. You're not cheap. You're a small market team. Go sign him now. Pitchers are much more likely to be aware of the risk to their arms and their legs and their knees and their careers. Sign him for 10 years like the shortstop in San Diego. Sign him, sign him. Don't let him get away. He is Nolan Ryan. Do not let him get away. So I began my day that way, looking at the bat. But let's do the rundown on the news, which is not as good as the Indians news. They had another night of riots in Minnesota last night. And it went very late. About 1,000 protesters. The usual stuff. Police using flashbangs. Protesters throw objects, rocks, frozen water bottles. Striking the officers. More flashbangs, riot gas, projectiles. A woman stuck her head out of the apartment and screamed that tear gas was into her home, begging officers to stop. Well, you know, it's not really the officers are not going to stop. Dozens of National Guard trucks and Humvees parked along the street. It's a nightmare in Minnesota, and the Chauvin verdict isn't even coming. And the fatal shooting of Wright on Sunday is just beginning. So the Gophers stayed in for a rough go. President Biden announced all U.S. troops will be out of Afghanistan by September 11th. Now, that's an arbitrary deadline. It's 20 years since the war began. And I don't know, somebody thought there was symmetry in that. They let the comms team decide that one. Jim Inhofe, who is the ranking Republican on armed services, rightly angry about it. Makes no sense. Trump was going to leave a few hundred troops at Bagram, which is what we should do for intelligence purposes, help the Afghan government stay afloat. You know, you can get a few hundred troops out of anywhere. We evacuated Al Asad when word got down that Iranian ballistic missiles were going to hit it after we killed Soleimani. We got people off of Assad in a matter of hours. If we had to get people off of Bagram, we could do it. It's much too important to do this. Symbolism is not national security. Symbolism is empty gestures for dummies. And the Biden team, they're sending a non-official delegation to Taiwan. That's not what we need. We need the end of strategic ambiguity. We need a declaration that ship will be matched with ship, plane with plane, aggression with aggression if Taiwan is threatened by China. But Joe Biden is not going to do any of that. They did do a good thing. Credit where credit is due. Biden approved the $23 billion sale of F-35 to the United Arab Emirates that had been agreed upon during the Abraham Accords process as a side collateral agreement. Very important to our little Sparta. General Mattis calls UAE little Sparta, and they are our most reliable ally in the Arab world, and they are absolute made of warrior material, and the F-35s belong there. So Biden took 90 days, but he got it done, and that's good news. Secretary Austin announcing that yesterday. Israel announcing as well they will not retaliate for the attack on one of their ships near the UAE, not by the UAE, but of course by the Iranians. Big, big news out of England. I love this headline from the Telegraph. Kate could act as peacemaker between William and Harry on day of Prince Philip's funeral. I'm sure that's got you riveted. It doesn't have me riveted. What has me riveted is the idiocy of the FDA and the CDC, and I use that word advisedly. They're good scientists. They're doing their best. They don't know anything about messaging and communication. Pausing the J&J COVID-19 vaccine is a magnitude 10 disaster in terms of getting people to take vaccines. They just don't. I work with them. I worked with Team Biden, with Andy Slavitt to push vaccine. I got vaccinated. Fetching Masuha got vaccinated. You should get vaccinated. Working against the anti-vaxxers, working against, does it change my DNA? I run into it in Denver. I run into it in California. I work with people. It's safe. It's safer than walking down the street. If you drive on the 405, you're more at risk than you are. If you're on the Beltway right now, listening to me going to work in D.C., you're at more risk right now than you would be from taking three of the vaccines. So they get 6 blood clots or 7 blood clots out of 7 million, and they pause it. And the only thing people hear is dangerous vaccine. It's like it's as though the scientists are so narrow gauge, so blinkered to the realities of the world, they do not know what they are doing. And that's on Joe Biden and the team. That's on Ron Klain. Ron Klain should have known better than this. Dumb, dumb, dumb. A 1 in a million chance of a blood clot, one of which is fatal, so it's 1 out of 7. And they pause an entire vaccine and they send, by the way, it's the vaccine that's got to work everywhere in the world that doesn't have refrigeration. It's the best hope for the world. And they just punched it in the nose on the basis of what? Panic. The risks, if any, are very, very low, says the New York Times. We know that. You know that. A member of my family in the military got J&J. That's what they're using abroad. And I'm glad they did. I got no doubts about it. You know, just now that they know that 1 out of 7 million people is going to die from it, they're going to make sure that 1 out of 7 million people doesn't die from it. Honest to goodness, their messaging. Just dumb, dumb, dumb. The good messaging, the Telegraph reporting in Oxford, no, actually, it's a U.S. study. Odds of death from coronavirus were 2.49 times greater. Compared to people who took 150 minutes of exercise a week versus the inactive. Exercise is the most important anti-COVID thing you can do. Exercise, 150 minutes a week. So it's 30 minutes a day, Monday through Friday. You take the weekends off, but you actually have to do it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and the weekends. Just walk for 30 minutes a day, and you've got 2.49 times greater compared to people of not dying from COVID. By the way, the death numbers, Great Britain is leading the way here. 1/4 of COVID deaths were not caused by the virus. They're going back now and looking now that the crisis is passing. And up to 1/2 of the people allegedly hospitalized for COVID are not hospitalized for COVID. They're hospitalized for other things, which is vastly inflated. We knew that. We knew it all along, but it's still a very dangerous disease. Senate is going to pass a bipartisan measure aimed at hate crimes, including those aimed at Asian Americans. Good on them. Yu Chang, who's the first baseman for the Indians, and threw an error, lost the game two nights ago. Errors are part of baseball, as Tito Francona said, and he got hit with all this anti-Asian bigotry online. Gosh, what knuckleheads there are out there. Federal appeals court upheld Ohio's Down syndrome abortion law. That's going to the Supreme Court. When I come back, I'm going to talk about inflation, because story after story about inflation, and you need to be aware of that. But you really need to be aware that the top bidder for the Tribune newspapers is a Swiss billionaire named Wyss, W-Y-S-S. And it turns out Mr. Wyss and a bunch of other people are running an octopus-like group of, you know, I've never been a big conspiracy theorist that George Soros is behind everything. But between the Hub Project, which he supports, and Soros, and now corporate America, 100 corporations trying to hammerjack Republicans who believe in voting integrity, I'm beginning to believe the left doesn't want to have a debate. The left wants to end the debate. And they're doing so any means that they can. And we have to fight back against that and fight for free speech. Go sign the petition to support Georgia at HughHewitt.com. Do it right now. The petition to stand with Georgia is at HughHewitt.com. I'll be right back. Welcome back, America. If you're a Taliban commander, what are you telling your troops today? I'm going to talk to Gallagher about this, Representative Gallagher, next hour, and then maybe Admiral McRaven, who spent a lot of years in Afghanistan. 20 years. And
look for a real estate network in the fall.
Yeah, it's because you're going to be occupying Kabul again. It is a complete and utter disaster for Afghanistan. Marco Rubio came on to Just the News yesterday and said this, cut number 12.
Well, that was a decision that began under President Trump. And so they've just, what they've announced is that they're going to stick with President Trump's decision with regards to Afghanistan. Look, the outcome is going to be a terrible thing. The Taliban, I believe, will eventually take over the country as they were in charge before, and it's not going to be a good outcome. The flip side of it is that I'm not sure what the pathway to a better future in the near term was. And you know, given all the other needs we're facing around the world, you know, once President Trump made that decision, I think the die was cast in that regard.
Do you think the U.S. has made enough progress on training the Afghan security force?
I mean, I hope so. I don't have a tremendous amount of I hope I'm wrong because of the implications, but I don't have a lot of faith that the current government in Afghanistan will be able to survive or hold on for long. The Taliban, my personal opinion, everything I know is that I think the Taliban will have an Afghanistan controlled by the Taliban again. And that's not a good outcome, but it's the direction that we're headed. And the previous administration agreed to that. The current administration stuck with it, and that's where we're going.
Previous administration, I think the senator is wrong there, but I could be wrong. I believe the previous administration was going to maintain a few hundred troops at Bagram, which is what you need for strategic fighter assistance, bomber assistance from long-range aircraft and the aircraft that you've got at Bagram. If you remove every American and you get out of there, skedaddle like South Vietnam, when you skedaddle, up north will not fall. I think there's enough weaponry. The tribal system will come back. It'll be like after the first Afghan civil war, before the Taliban arose, because there's enough weaponry in Afghanistan and money that the warlords will come back. Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor yesterday, cut 14, talks about this.
It was our hasty abandonment of Afghanistan in the 1990s that allowed the Taliban to grab power in a bloody civil war and create the safe haven for terrorism that led to September the 11th, 2001. Conflicts do not simply end. They are won or they are lost. America and American administrations must be in the business of winning.
And we're not in the business of winning. President Trump was also not in the business of winning, but he was also not in the business of losing. And that is an acceptable stalemate, is acceptable. And, you know, Kandahar in the Taliban hand and Kabul in the free Afghan government hand in the north in the hands of the ethnic groups of the north. It's a federal system like Kurdistan. We should have carved out of Kurdistan. We should have, could have, would have. I'm not a soldier, nor did I stay at a Holiday Inn. The best minds in America have been focused on this for two decades. They cannot figure out Afghanistan. By the way, that's like the British Empire. By the way, that's like the Russian Empire. By the way, that's like Alexander the Great. As our friend Stephen Pressfield likes to say, it's the tribe, stupid. And we're never going to beat that. Not in my lifetime, probably not in anyone's lifetime listening. It's going to take... Well, I fear what's going to happen is that the Chinese Communist Party, which does not have concern about human rights the way we do, and they don't have a media that covers their atrocities like they are committing in Xinjiang province, they're going to move that killing machine west. They're just going to move over their border, and they're just going to start killing and taking and interning and prison camping and moving the machinery of ethnic supremacy forward for the rare earth mineral wealth of Afghanistan, and they will subdue that, unlike Alexander the Great, the British Empire, the Russian Empire, the American Empire. And we don't have an empire. We have an empire of ideas, not colonies. But just like those four failed, China's going to not fail because it's connected to the landmass that is China. They will fail at sea if we are strong enough in our messaging, but we're not winning this round. I don't think the Taliban are going to be stupid enough to let terrorist aim at America again from Afghanistan. They don't want to do this again. And when we're mad, we're mad. But now we're tired and we're going home. And we got to focus on China. And so we got to put our money into the Navy and we got to pivot away from Afghanistan, the Arab countries. And I get it. But look, let's just be realistic. We're quitting. It's Vietnam 2.0. We're quitting and we're walking away. And it is a disaster. I can't put it any other way. We needed to keep a few hundred troops in Bagram and hold that line and support them with money and weaponry, like we promised to do to the government of South Vietnam in 1975 and did not do when it fell. Jerry Ford was against that. This time, the Republicans are just shrugging their shoulders and saying, nothing we can do. Biden wants a symbolic exit by September 11th. That is the dumbest thing. 20 years and lose on the 20th anniversary. That's the 20th anniversary of 9/11, the last man standing in Afghanistan. Wow. I'll be right back, America. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you this. There has never been a more important time to protect your digital rights. That's why I and thousands of my patriotic listeners choose to secure our online data by using ExpressVPN. Do you believe that a VPN isn't for you because you can use the internet just fine without one? Anytime you go online, my friends, your internet service provider can see every site you are visiting. You think that VPNs are complex and only for tech experts? No, they're not. Trust me. With ExpressVPN, you launch the app, tap one button to protect yourself, and it's done. It's that simple. I trust ExpressVPN to protect my online data because they're rated number one by CNET and Wired, and they stand for my values. So now is the time for you to take a stance. Take back your privacy at expressvpn.com/Hewitt. You get three extra months for on a one-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Hewitt to get three extra months free. Visit expressvpn.com/Hewitt right now. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, candidates. Hugh Hewitt working to repair the damage done by the government yesterday to the vaccine effort. Let me be clear. Get vaccinated. Go get vaccinated. Let me also be clear. If you got the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, you're fine. You are fine. I have a family member in the military who received it overseas. I'm glad they did. If you got J&J, if they offered me J&J and I hadn't already been vaccinated, take it tomorrow. 1 in 7 million people died from a rare blood clot. They're not even sure it's J&J. 7 total cases out of 7 million injections of J&J, and they paused it. And they paused it without any thought of messaging. Just a complete and utter fiasco by Team Biden. So they send the president first try, send the president to the Oval and see if he can't straighten out, swing and a miss, cut number three.
My message to American people on the vaccine is, I told you all, I made sure we have 600 million doses of the mRNA, not of either Johnson & Johnson and or AstraZeneca. So there's enough vaccine that is basically 100% unquestionable for every single solitary American. Thank you.
Now, what did that mean? Let me give you an analogy from the past. When I was young and poor and in law school, I would go with Tim Butler, one of my roommates, to the one of those steakhouse chains that really wasn't steak. I'm not sure what they served, but they had giant salad bars, and they had the salad bar screen. I've subsequently learned that the salad bar screen really does not do the public health thing that you want it to do. But in any event, it looked fine, and you could eat as much salad as you want. And so we had no money, so we would go there and buy a cheap steak, which wasn't really steak. I'm not sure what it was. And then we'd eat enough salad to, you know, turn into rabbits. And Butler was a fantastic runner, so he'd eat twice as much as I did. But it was a word, you know, a salad. It was a salad line. You've been through them, right? 1,000 different things. That was Joe Biden in the Oval. A word salad that he spilled, and the dressing went everywhere, and it was a nightmare, and nobody understood what he meant to say. So let's take our second try yesterday after the fiasco by CDC and FDA, which they get, they take back if they could. I'm not even sure they coordinated with anybody. Tony Fauci, and I like Dr. Fauci. I'm not one of these people that hate Fauci Club, not me. Had him on. I'd love to have him on again. He is not very good at messaging. He's a terrific man and a great scientist. And if you can spend enough time with him, you can drill down far enough, but nobody ever does. And you can get him to say the right thing. You can finally get through all the hemming and hawing that scientists do and get to the bottom line. Here he is at the White House yesterday, cut number 7.
So when individuals, particularly younger women, who might come into a physician with a particular thrombotic phenomenon, which is things that happen for other reasons all the time, that we want to alert physicians to take a history of a recent vaccination, that would be important. So the pause not only allows us to take a look at the cases and learn more, but it is also a signal out there to help the physicians. A common question, and I'm sure we'll have a number of questions which Jeff and I will be happy to answer to you, but one of the questions that comes up already rather frequently, does this have anything to do with the efficacy of the vaccine? So we know that there have been 6.85 million doses of J&J distributed in the United States thus far. So someone who maybe had it a month or two ago would say, what does this mean for me? It really doesn't mean anything. You're okay, because if you look at the frame, the time frame when this occurs, it's pretty tight from a few days, 6 to 13 days from the time of the vaccination. The next question is one that we're all obviously aware of. What?
Okay, so a thrombotic. Okay, again, messaging 101. Johnson & Johnson is safe. We want to look for a couple of extra days to make sure it's safe. And so we're not going to use Johnson & Johnson for 2 days, but it won't affect anyone. Then we're going to use it again. That's what they should have said. But they can't say that because the FDA didn't say that, because the FDA's got them tied up with follow the science nonsense. Of course we should follow the science. Science doesn't understand risk. Risk is what we understand intuitively, sometimes poorly. We don't know the risk of inflation very well, but we're pressing ahead and spending trillions of dollars. I think the risk is high. They think the risk is low. So then the question comes, when will it come back on the market? And it's just a disaster. It's a train wreck. Cut number 9.
I want to just ask you very directly, are you ruling out the possibility that the vaccine could be removed from the market? I mean, are you ruling out that, are you expecting it to be reallowed?
You know, I think it would be premature to comment on that. And that's the reason why the pause was done, so that they could take a good look at it very carefully, look at every different factor. I wouldn't want to speculate.
Stop. Disaster. Disaster. I don't know if it's ever coming back. What do they think? Do they not understand anything about marketing? I've been doing this for 30 years. I know how to sell stuff. Yes, it's coming back on the market. Yes, it's safe. Why did we do this? Well, you know, we got some super cautious scientists, and they got one death and 7 million. And normally, and honestly, what did it do to the rest of the whole COVID crisis theory? If one death and 7 million vaccines is enough to stop a vaccination program, is there no common sense in government at all, anywhere, ever? What's the message it sends about vaccine? It's completely the wrong message. COVID will kill you. These vaccines work. 7 times in 8 million doses, someone had a thrombotic event that might actually not actually be related to Johnson & Johnson vaccine, and it might. And they could have said, and we're going to study that. And by the way, we're telling physicians to look for it and monitor it, but we're going to go full speed ahead. They don't know. I could describe it in colorful ways. Donald Trump surfaced yesterday. Former President Trump was on my friend Seb Gorka's show, and he was very blunt about this. He's absolutely right. Cut 21.
So I think we have a great bet. At the same time, I think I'm getting the word out really well. We do releases. We release when there's something like today. We did a release on Johnson & Johnson. Why did the FDA? I understand the FDA very well. I'm the one that pushed them. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a vaccine for 3 to 5 years if you had one at all. And so I understand. Why did they have to do that to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Because they put a stigma on it by doing what they did. And it's a disgrace. Frankly, it's a disgrace. They want to get publicity or they want to do something. But I know them very well. I know them very well. You wouldn't have had a vaccine for a long time if you ever would have had it. And it's too bad. It's too bad what they did, because it makes it difficult, frankly, for that vaccine. And that's, you know, a one-shot vaccine, easier to transport. It's got a lot of and it had something very interesting. I guess zero people, when they had COVID, zero people died from it. They had a zero percentage died from it. That's a big deal. So for them to go and say, we're going to pause it, that's a bad thing when you say you're going to pause it, unless you had a big problem, and they seem to have a very small problem. So it's just, I think it's a shame.
It is a shame. And by the way, I speak Trump, and so I can explain what he meant there. Just like Joe Biden, he got off path towards the end there when he said they've had zero people. It shows that nobody died who got the J&J vaccine from COVID. Nobody. And some people who got the Pfizer vaccine and I got Pfizer, and some people got Moderna, they have died. And so it's very rare. You got like 90% efficacy, but some people with Johnson, no one died with Johnson & Johnson. So it's the most efficacious thus far as we know. It's very, very safe. And they paused it. And the president, former president, is right. It's a stigma. And what he hinted at, I don't know if he could articulate this, is public choice theory about government agencies. Were they looking for publicity? No, they're looking for mission creep. I mean, if the FDA gets the reputation of sitting on drugs for years and years and years that are effective, and they don't let Americans take risks that Americans will take and to stay alive, it's the right to try stuff. If they will actually stop drugs that have a 1 in 7 million fatality rate with an efficacy of 100% against the reason that they are being given, what will Americans think about the FDA? They'll think it's a crazy, crazy bureaucracy. Crazy bureaucracy. And it's public choice theory that agencies act in a way to perpetuate their own mission. And so the only rational explanation I can come up for with the FDA is it was a flex. They flexed their muscles yesterday. We are still the FDA, and we're not going to get rolled over by Trumpists out there that make us approve all these drugs that work. No, we're the CDC. I pounded the table, and Dwayne's going to be mad at me. We're the doggone CDC, and no one's going to tell us that we can't tell drug manufacturers what to do. So we're just going to pause Johnson & Johnson. Everyone will know we're still here. We'll stir out our desks, and they still have to be afraid of us. Because we're the FDA and the CDC. And so Big Pharma, you can't push us around. No more Donald Trumps around here. And they screwed up a national vaccine program to flex. That's Hugh Hewitt's theory, and I'm sticking with it. When we come back, what do you think? 1-800-520-1234. Dumbest thing I have seen done by the government in a year and a half of dumb things and smart things and heroic things. But there's some dumb stuff mixed in there, and this is the dumbest thing. Stay tuned. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. I know not the fastest man in Congress. That who it is. Mike Gallagher, congressman from Wisconsin, is the fastest man in Congress, though I believe he has to defend his title fairly soon. Is the Nike Challenge coming up pretty soon? I'm sure it's called the Nike Challenge anymore, congressman.
It's called the ACLI Challenge, and I believe it's set for September. So I have a little bit of time to train, and I have lost a step. So open invitation to Tom Cotton and any other challengers if they want to, you know, step up to the plate and make this a fun competition. You got some months to get ready.
You know, it's a 5K race, and that's why you're good at it. If it was a 10K and it involved a fourth mile, you wouldn't run. I mean, you'd be like the Packers. You'd go off the course at mile 4, right?
How dare you? It is true, however, over 3 miles.
It is true. You go fourth mile or you go away.
Over 3 miles, I'm useless. The Marine Corps, it's 3 miles, and anything longer than that, I just, you know, Gallagher's, like dwarves in Lord of the Rings, we're good over short distances.
Or like the Packers on for 3 downs out of 4. Hey, Congressman, serious stuff. President announced yesterday we're skedaddling from Afghanistan. That was not the Trump plan. The Trump plan was to leave troops at Bagram, as far as I understand it. Now we're not going to do that. What's going to happen to Bagram? It's going to be like Taliban Central.
Well, Bagram, I think there's a missed opportunity there to talk about the enduring relevance of Bagram, particularly in light of great power competition, right? In other words, if we go to war with China, bombers coming out of Bagram provide us with an opportunity to target Western targets for China, including their space and their counter space assets. And I really think as we confront honestly the fact that the American people do want us to responsibly reduce our presence over time, we can have a grown-up conversation about where are the areas where we want to leave an enduring presence as we transition to great power competition, and Bagram is one of those. The other thing I'd say is setting the date on 9/11/2021, I think is a really dumb move. I think it hands a PR victory to the Taliban. I think it totally undermines everything that Biden said as a candidate, criticizing Trump for politically motivated timelines and not condition-based withdrawal. I think there's other unanswered questions around whether our allies were consulted during this process. The fact that right now they're briefing NATO allies in Brussels suggests that they weren't, that the decision was made without an honest discussion with their allies. The other thing I think we need clarity on is how the administration intends to avoid that Saigon moment. With the Taliban already failing to live up to its obligations under the peace agreement, Americans should rightly be concerned both about the fate of the Afghans who stood shoulder to shoulder alongside us for the past 20 years, as well as the potential for the Taliban to harbor terrorist groups. Once we're out, we will unlikely be able to get back in if needed.
I've got Admiral McRaven coming on a little bit later today. He's got a new book out, The Honor Code, and I want to talk to him. But I'm not necessarily convinced that all of Afghanistan is going to fall. I think we're going to end up pretty much with a Kurdistan in the north, and hopefully Kabul stays in free Afghan hands. But Helmand and Kandahar look pretty tough. Is that your assessment?
I think so. And I think we need to be very honest about our interests in the country, right? Besides the necessity of avoiding another terrorist safe haven that would threaten the homeland, I don't think we have vital interest in Afghanistan. And so, again, we are going to have to focus our resources and our attention on other theaters, the Indo-Pacific. And I'm not suggesting there are easy answers to the Afghan problem, but we have to avoid some politically motivated decision here. And again, I just think the PR win for the Taliban is evident with the way they're setting the date with this drawdown.
Agree. Now, you mentioned China and Afghanistan. I did earlier in the show. I think of China and Afghanistan having a giant tractor, a giant cat that just goes forward mile by mile and digs up, and they don't care about human rights, and they don't care about bad publicity because there is no publicity in China. And they just roll over the people who are in their way, and they are pressing Afghanistan from the east, moving west. Are they going to end up being the empire that succeeds where Alexander the Great, Britain, Russia, and the United States have not succeeded?
Well, certainly they do think about foreign states as barbarians. So they have a long tradition of what's called barbarian handling if you sort of dig into Chinese history. And their goal through the Belt and Road Initiative is to create not allies or partners, but vassal states that are entirely dependent upon the Chinese Communist Party for their largesse. And if you look at Afghanistan, what is really interesting is the investments that China has made in Pakistan next to Afghanistan, particularly the Gwadar port in Pakistan. China's really trying to build out a series of strategic bases along the Eurasian Rimland in order to not only project power, undermine U.S. power projection, in the same process, but to secure their economic interests throughout the region and create dependent vassal states that are entirely at the whim and mercy of the Chinese Communist Party.
Congressman, I know you know your history. There's a great book called The Honorable Company, which is about the British East India Company. And they are modeling their empire on the British Empire, which was resource poor and ship rich. And they sailed the world and they had ports everywhere. And they had India for great wealth and they had the Middle East for transit. And I just see the British Empire re-emerging in the British Empire with Chinese characteristics, President Xi might say.
I like that. I've often thought that there should be an HBO show about the British East India Company, that would be great material for an in-depth show. So there you go, Hugh. That's a free idea that you can produce on the Salem Network.
I'm going forward with that. Let me talk to you about the strangest story of the day. President Biden doesn't want to leave strategic ambiguity behind unless it applies to Johnson & Johnson, which he trashed yesterday. Their team managed to screw up the entire vaccine rollout. Let's put that aside. He is sending a delegation to Taiwan that he's not sending. It's a non-official delegation with Chris Dodd, who's his good friend and actually carries a lot of weight. If you're talking to Chris Dodd, you're kind of talking to the president. And then, for reasons that I do not understand, he's sending Richard Armitage, he of infamous role in the Karl Rove Scooter Libby meltdown that led to the Fitzgerald special counsel, because it was Armitage who leaked the name of Valerie Plame, and no one ever, and Colin Powell and Armitage didn't tell the special counsel or the White House, and we had 3 years of investigation. Why is Richard Armitage going with Chris Dodd to Taiwan? Why not just say we will meet ship with ship and plane with plane in the defense of Taiwan?
I have no idea. It makes no sense. And consider the fact that on Monday, 25 Chinese aircraft, including 18 fighters, 4 nuclear-capable bombers, 2 sub-hunters, and an early warning aircraft entered Taiwan's airspace. And this incursion is part of a disturbing trend of increased CCP belligerence toward Taiwan. So far in response, we've seen the administration say some of the right things, but I think this move makes no sense. I mean, for example, Secretary Blinken on Sunday insisted that the U.S. would ensure Taiwan has the ability to defend itself. Well, it would be a great follow-up if they expanded the commitment to help Taiwan to acquire advanced anti-ship cruise missiles, for example, right? And all of this, I think, starts with ending strategic ambiguity. There was a time when it may have served American interests. Let's not forget that part of the rationale behind the policy was the potential, if far-fetched, scenario in which Taiwan was the aggressor. But those days are long gone. Taiwan poses absolutely no military danger to the PRC. But every day that Beijing isn't quite sure if an American president would sacrifice American lives to keep Taiwan free is a dangerous day. I actually...
Go ahead. Well, we're in a very perilous time. I talked about it yesterday with Cotton and with Admiral Stab, and got an interesting conversation thereafter about Whitsun Reef. And I wanted to ask you about Whitsun Reef, because I don't know much about it, except that the PRC are sending all their blue hulls, which is that they're sort of coastal ships, to gather in long lines of ships and defy the Philippines authorities. What do you think we ought to do in response to that?
Well, I actually teamed up with some of my colleagues looking at this, the entire Taiwan scenario, of which that is a part, to introduce the Taiwan Invasion Prevention Act, which would issue a standing authorization for the use of military force to defend Taiwan. It would take a page out of Cold War history and the standing authorization Congress gave President Eisenhower to defend Formosa. But it's not enough just to talk tough. We need to walk the walk and invest in the defense capabilities, which would actually deter the CCP from taking action against Taiwan. There, too, I'm worried about the follow-through on the part of the administration. In real terms, the defense budget that they just proposed represents a cut from last year, and it's between $25 to $40 billion below where every single bipartisan expert tells us we need to be in terms of maintaining that 3 to 5% real growth. So there's a lot of things I think the administration needs to do in partnership with Congress, and I fear they're going in the wrong direction.
Now, it's not anti-climate to invest in hypersonic missiles and anti-submarine technology and in attack submarine. It's not anti-climate. So we've got $4 trillion in spending. Was any of it infrastructure to expand Wisconsin's frigate construction capability? Is any of it infrastructure to go into submarine pens in San Francisco at Mare Island? Did any of it go to defense?
No. The infrastructure plan is incredibly reckless, incredibly reckless. It's going to make our infrastructure problems worse because it repeats the failed mistake of the past where we overinvest and we discount the cost of maintaining infrastructure over the life cycle of a project. And the fact is we are spending more in real terms on infrastructure as a percentage of GDP than we were spending in the 1960s. The fundamental problem is our assets are depreciating and crumbling more quickly than they were back then. And this is going to make that problem far worse. There is so many ridiculous proposals in this bill And and now they're coming to us saying, when they have $2 trillion for every grab bag progressive initiative under the sun, that we can't afford to grow the defense budget by 3 to 5% every year. It makes absolutely no sense.
Well, Nancy Pelosi, last question, Congressman. She only has a 2-vote margin right now. Are there two Democrats, like Lurie, on your committee? She's got a new challenger. She got to deliver some money for the Navy, or she's going to get beat like a drum in that 2022 election. Are there other Democrats who realize they cannot starve defense and will join you in rejecting an infrastructure bill that does not fund some defense spending?
I hope so. There's certainly a lot of national security-minded Democrats that got elected in 2018 in Trump districts. A lot of them I work with on the Armed Services Committee. Many of them either served in the military, like Representative Luria, or served in the Defense Department, right? Representative Slotkin, who I co-chair a task force on supply chain vulnerability with. And so my hope is that a lot of those members can step back from this ledge. However, I will admit I've been surprised that Speaker Pelosi has been able to get near unanimity on some of these very radical proposals, such as H.R. 1, where only one Democrat defected in the vote on the House from an extremely radical centralization and nationalization of our entire election process.
Well, that's a subject for another day, but I am surprised that Democrats who want to get reelected in 2022 have gone that far left. They can come back right on the infrastructure bill. Congressman, look forward to seeing you out there on the byways. Try a fourth mile. Don't be a Packer. Be a Brown. Go the distance. Congressman Mike Gallagher, friends. Welcome back, America. Our big Jim and Jim Garrity, the indispensable man from National Review. Good morning, Jim. How are you?
How are you this morning?
I'm very happy because I've been reading the New York Post this morning, which quotes Deseret News writer Doug Robinson Peel open letter to the New York Jets. Please, Jets, give Zach Wilson a break. Look, the Jets are to quarterbacks what Larry King was to marriage, Robinson wrote. Look at their record. He's begging them not to take Zach Wilson. What do you think, Garrity? There's truth in that, right? You can't argue with him.
I'm not taking this grief from a Cleveland Browns fan. All right?
Hey, we are Super Bowl contenders. We don't even.
Have you guys had anybody since Kosar? Anyway,
we have got a guy named Baker Mayfield who got a playoff win. You know what a playoff win is? I don't know if that's in your background.
Very good. Very good. Yeah. Hey, that's what you had. You haven't had one of those since before. You had one of those after the winless season, right?
We haven't had a playoff win since 1994. That was our first playoff win. But we are back and going to the Super Bowl this year. But you're back rebuilding. I mean, a quarterback project that doesn't even last 3 years is kind of sad, Garrity.
Well, here's the thing. I'm perfectly fine with the Jets trading away Sam Darnold. I wouldn't be surprised if he flourished in Carolina. Look, I mean, Hugh, you're a football fan. Do you really think the problem is Sam Darnold, or do you really think the problem is Adam Gase and Joel Loggins calling the plays?
There are many. I don't understand. You have a dysfunction. We had a dysfunctional franchise in Cleveland. We always knew what the problem was. No quarterback. So they kept. We tried 40 of them, right? So you just keep trying until you find one. But normally you give them longer than 2 years.
It's three.
Adam
Gase is calling screens on third and long, and there's terrible protection, and there's no running game, and they let Robbie Anderson walk to the Panthers. No quarterback's going to thrive in that situation. So I'm very curious to see how Darnold does in a new uniform. It's pretty obvious the Jets are going to draft Zach Wilson, and as long as they have a decent protection around him, I think he's great things await him. But I wouldn't be surprised if they went with Justin Fields. Is this all just a sales pitch for Justin Fields in the end?
Yes, it is. It's exactly what it is. I want Justin Fields in the Big Apple. He's much better for the Big Apple than Zach Wilson. Another pretty boy. It doesn't work. You got to have a guy with legs.
I would not mind selecting Fields, but, and perhaps it's entirely possible this is a Joe Douglas smokescreen. He really does want Justin Fields, and all of this is meant to throw everybody off. But when you have the second overall pick, you don't really need to do that.
That's what I was going to say. You don't need to head fake anyone when Urban's already got the guys measured and coming, and they know that Lawrence is going. Okay, let's turn to politics. You're pretty good at messaging. I'm pretty good at messaging. I was not consulted by the White House on the messaging yesterday that trashed months and months of vaccine work. That the dumbest move by the government in a year of dumb moves involving COVID, a year and a half of dumb moves involving COVID. What did you make of the FDA, CDC pause? Oh, God. I can't even say it. What did you
Absolutely
think?
Absolutely maddening, in part because we saw a very similar process going on with the European equivalent of the CDC. and the AstraZeneca vaccine. And all over Europe, they stopped using the AstraZeneca vaccine for about a week or so. As your listeners probably know, Europe is in much worse shape than we are. They are much slower in their rollout of their vaccine to their citizens than the United States is. And it was a similar issue of blood clots. And, you know, I put some of this in the Morning Jolt yesterday. Look, you can have blood clots for a whole bunch of different reasons. A whole bunch of health, you know, people worry about this if they're sitting on long plane rides for long periods of time, right? I mean, circulation issues. But one of the more intriguing things is the possibility of this relating to birth control pills and or pregnancy. You notice it in the New York Times article describing it. All of the people who had been reported this were women between the ages of, it was 18 to 48 or something like that. Does this mean it was birth control pills? Look, we just don't know right now. But apparently, you know, blood clots are not that uncommon amongst the general population. So could it be that these blood clots are a result of taking the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Yeah, it is a possibility. I don't mind the FDA taking a second look at this. I do have a bit of a problem with the fact, look, we've still got, you know, anywhere from 750 to 1,000 people dying of COVID-19 a day. And you're going to say, okay, we're going to halt this. And that's not even the real problem. People get a week from now. We've vaccinated most of the most vulnerable folks. We're probably going to get through this part okay. What really worries me, I don't know about you, Hugh, I was hearing from people who are saying, aha, see, the vaccine isn't safe.
100%.
That's why I'm not getting, yeah. 100%. I was skeptics all day long.
The anti-vaxxers rose up as if one and said, yeah, see, we told you.
And now they trust the FDA.
And Johnson & Johnson is going to be the one that gets to the third world because its refrigeration requirements are lower. So they have screwed up, and we got to worry about the third world because of variants. I'm very pro-science on this. I just, the government doesn't know what it's doing.
Well, I mean, I think this has this extraordinarily risk-averse, cautious mind thing. And I guess in some way, maybe they think that they are helping fight vaccine skepticism. By doing this pause, if they do what the European agency did with the AstraZeneca vaccine, is they'll look at the data for, you know, a week and say, you know, there's no reason to think this vaccine is dangerous, but we'll put a warning label on this. And the idea of we want doctors to be on the lookout, basically, for the potential of blood clots after somebody gets this vaccine. Well,
Jim,
not going to do any good.
Consider the public choice theory, which is that the FDA is flexing its muscles to remind everyone it has muscles. That's what the public choice theory is. Garrity the Indispensable. Get his Morning Jolt at National Review. Follow him on Twitter, at Jim Garrity, and pray for the Jets. I'll be right back, America. Stay tuned. The fact is the Internet never forgets. There has never been a more important time to protect your Internet activity, your digital data. That's why I urge you to get ExpressVPN. Everything you search for, watch, or click online can be tracked back to you by big tech companies, and they do it. They match your activity to your true identity using your device's unique IP address. That's why you need to switch, and I switched, to ExpressVPN. On your computer, on your phone, every IP address is masked by a secure VPN server, which makes it harder for websites to identify me. Plus, you can use ExpressVPN on up to 5 devices simultaneously. That's why they're rated the number one VPN by CNET and Wired. So stop handing over your data to big tech companies. Go with the VPN I trust for online protection. Visit expressvpn.com/Hewitt to get 3 months free on a 1-year package. That's expressvpn.com/Hewitt. To get 3 extra months for free, go to expressvpn.com/Hewitt right now to learn more. Morning Glory America, bonjour, hi Canada, Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined by New York Times reporter Michael Scheer, one of their White House correspondents. Hello, Michael, how are you?
Good morning, Hugh.
I am back inside the Beltway and happy to be here, but I am surprised and confused by a story out of the White House I was hoping you could help me with.
Okay.
President Biden is not sending, an official, not official delegation to Taiwan, led by Chris Dodd, his real best friend, and of all people, Richard Armitage, which I just do not understand. What's the theory here, Michael?
I don't know. It's not a story I've been directly reporting on, but I do think, you know, the conversation that we had the last time I was on, in which you posed the question, is the United States taking seriously the military threat to Taiwan by China that seems to be ramping up? The Chinese have been very aggressive of late. And I think the answer to that question is yes, they are taking it seriously. measures. The United States government does understand that the threat towards Taiwan, even a military threat, is probably more serious now than it's been in a long time. And I think, I think the delegation that they're sending, as well as the attention that is being paid inside the West Wing to that question, is evidence that that the United States is concerned, and that they're beginning to think through, if not specific military or diplomatic responses, and at least trying to get their ducks in a row to figure out how would they react to various provocations by the Chinese.
I think they're getting to Neville Chamberlain land, and so appeasement-itis is heavy there. And if it wasn't, they would be sending specific messages about Whitsun Reef. And has that come up in the briefing room when you've been there? Has anyone asked Jen Psaki about Whitsun Reef, where the Chinese are collecting all of their little boats and trying to abrogate Philippine sovereignty?
That specific thing has not come up to my knowledge. I don't watch every single briefing the entire way through, so it's possible that somebody did ask. But I do know the question, the general question of what will the United States do in the event that the Chinese move on Taiwan in a more aggressive way has come up. They've been very circumspect, at least Psaki has been very circumspect in the briefing about what specific options are on the table. But I think the question of, that you pose, right, which is sort of appeasement on the one hand versus, serious military defense of Taiwan, the United States coming to, coming to an actual armed conflict with China. I mean, I think that's the big question on the table, is where on that spectrum will the United States and the Biden administration be? I don't think we know the answer to that yet.
Yeah, the abrogation of strategic ambiguity is urgent, the need to do that. I thought Mike Pompeo did it very well in the last administration, though President Trump was himself a practitioner of the strategic ambiguity. And as Josh Rogan's book makes clear, he was doubtful about the ability to defend Taiwan. But actually, it's pretty easily accomplished if there's a price to be paid. I just wish that they would announce they're willing to pay it. Let me ask you about messaging, Michael. Yesterday was a fiasco on Johnson & Johnson. And I helped the Andy Slavitt team try and talk up vaccines. I talk up vaccines every day. People need to go and get them. 7 cases out of 8 million vaccines, 1 fatality, limited to women 18 to 43, and they botched the entire messaging. Are they aware of how badly botched it is?
I don't know. It's hard to get inside their heads to know if they understand the disconnect. But one of my colleagues wrote a story about this in today's paper, and what I think is very true and gets at the point that you're making, is the real disconnect between the scientists who view this as, well, of course, you just want to pause for a couple of days to, do a little bit of research to satisfy some, academic kind of interest in knowing whether the blood clotting is actually linked to the vaccine. The scientists' reaction disconnected completely from the way the public understands and took that in part, as you say, because of the way the sort of stumbling way that the announcement was made and came out. It sort of came out of nowhere. People weren't prepared for it. And I do think that the public sees that very differently, and that it comes across the way that it's come across in Europe, frankly. There's polling now that suggests that more than half of the public in Europe doesn't trust the AstraZeneca vaccine, which had a similar issue with a few instances of blood clotting. And I fear that that's what's happening in the United States, is that this is going to be used by people to very much undermine the confidence in all of these vaccines.
AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson, for the benefit of the audience, are the two that can travel easiest. They can go to Brazil, they can go to Africa, they can go anywhere in the world because the refrigeration requirements are much less required. I don't think there is any with Johnson & Johnson. So they will stop the variant spread, which will stop in turn any variant coming to the United States or to the West that is evasive of Pfizer and Moderna. It has to get out there. And what frustrates me about the reporting, Michael, is they say the CDC and the FDA decided. Well, alphabet agencies don't decide. People do. And somebody made that decision. And I haven't seen any reporting on whether or not they cleared it with Dr. Fauci, whether they cleared it with the White House. but it was public choice theory at its best. The FDA reminding all the drug companies that they exist and they have power to the great destructive impact that you just discussed, which is to sow seeds of doubt across the third world and in the United States about vaccines generally and Johnson & Johnson specifically. And then President Biden botched the replay. They went to the replay officials in the Oval, and that was a mess. And then Tony Fauci botched the second call. It was like watching a Browns game where the referees hate the Browns. It was terrible. Are they going to try and do pickup sticks today?
Yeah, I don't. We'll see what happens today. I mean, look, one of the things that is true about politics at this level is that oftentimes the people in power look to the past for guidance, right? And one of the things that the Biden administration, one of the lessons the Biden administration took from the Trump administration was that there was too much political interference by the Trump administration in the scientific judgments of places, of the top people at places like the CDC and the FDA. So now the Biden administration has swung very much in the complete opposite direction, where they have, you know, they've said that they are hands off, that they want to let the scientists, the top officials at the sort of medical and public health agencies make those decisions. You got to sort of wonder whether that has swung a little bit too far, that there does need to sometimes be some tempering of medical and public health, you know, decision making, where somebody in the White House says, let's think about this a minute. Is this, you know, how do we present this to the American public so that they understand the context?
Yeah, bureaucrats do not know best how to message and import. They undercut the entire, I dealing with callers this morning have been waiting to rise up as one to say, see, we told you. They underestimate entirely the difficulty of getting a messaging going. And if you defer to a bureaucrat, they will do, well, President Trump, do you know he was on Seb Gorka's show yesterday? Did you hear that, Michael?
I didn't. No, I don't listen to Seb's show.
Let me play for you cut 21, Donald Trump on Seb's show yesterday.
At the same time, I think I'm getting the word out really well. We do releases. We release when there's something like today. We did a release on Johnson & Johnson. Why did the FDA? I understand the FDA very well. I'm the one that pushed them. Otherwise, you wouldn't have a vaccine for 3 to 5 years if you had one at all. And so I understand. Why did they have to do that to the Johnson & Johnson vaccine? Because they put a stigma on it by doing what they did. And
all right, there's more, but the point is, he did break all the rules at the FDA. You're right. He interfered. Thank God, because every expert said we wouldn't have a vaccine for years, and we have one in December of last year because of Operation Warp Speed 2, 3, in fact. You can't let the FDA revert to norm, Michael, and that's what I think happened yesterday.
And that's, you know, a one-shot vaccine.
Well, okay, I guess what I would say is, I
got a lot of,
you know, the
and it had
folks
something
that,
very
that,
interesting.
That
I guess,
I've talked to suggest that there's got to be some kind of middle ground there, right? The reporting that we did last year was that there was an awful lot of unwarranted political interference by the Trump administration. I'm not sure that I've talked to anybody who really thinks that the FDA and the CDC would have held up a vaccine for 3 to 5 years. You know, the vaccine development was largely driven by the companies themselves. With some, you know, financial assistance from the United States, to be sure. The question is not, do you revert to a place where, you know, the White House is overriding the best judgments of the FDA and the CDC? The question is, you know, do you need from a White House an aggressive understanding of the kind of messaging and the kind of impact that the CDC's decisions have, so that, as you say, the American public understands the context of it. And I agree with you. Scientists are not the best at public messaging. If they were the best at public messaging, they wouldn't be scientists.
They wouldn't be scientists. And
they would be PR people.
I am one of the people that 100% stand behind what Trump did to the FDA. But thank you, Michael Shear. I'll be right back. Michael Shear, the New York Times. Follow him at Shear M on Twitter. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show.